forestry to modify all forest management plans to the extent necessary to achieve policy goals and direction established by the definition. We do not have a fiscal or revenue impact statement, and there is in front of the committee members and available in the back a stack of testimony that was submitted.
And with that, yes.
Okay. Chair Olbin and committee members, for the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, state representative from District 1, which is the South Coast. I thought it might be some value to some members of this committee if they knew of my interest and background and knowledge of forestry issues. I'm going to do that first. My wife and I have owned and managed our tree farm in Curry County since 1972. We were named Curry County Tree Farmers of the Year in 81, State Tree Farmers for the State of Oregon in 1992. In 93, we were selected out of 73,000 registered tree farmers and honored as National Tree Farmers of the Year. I spent 2 years on the National Tree Farm System Executive Board in Washington, D.C., and several years on the Forest Energy Council and Taxation, also in Washington, D.C. Governor Roberts placed me on the Board of Forestry in 1994, where I served 6 years. And I also represent the Board of Forestry on the Oregon Water Enhancement Board for 5 years. While on the Board of Forestry, we were grappling with the purpose of the lands rule and the definition of greatest permanent value. I, for one, was satisfied with what was then in rules and understood very well the need to balance timber harvest with other values. I did not believe there was a conflict or that harvesting excluded other values such as clean air, water values, fish and wildlife habitat, endangered species, recreation, those types of issues. At the time, at least two or three of the board members were concerned as how the new definition of greatest permanent value would be interpreted by the courts or by the extreme in the environmental community. In my opinion, the board was trapped. The board worked by consensus, which in this case caused us, in my opinion again, to move from a point of right to something less to appease the extreme in the environmental community. The county trust lands that are now the Tillamook and Clatsop State Forest were handed over to the state to be managed for the counties. There was an understanding, and I know that you will have this explained to you today and perhaps something, some discussion of the Crabtree case. House Bill 2975, page 2, section 2, refers to the development of a forest plan. I was on the board while the forest plan for the Tillamook Class of State Forest was being developed, and it was an arduous task. It took years. The board solicited information from the independent multidisciplinary science team to help us understand some issues. We were trying to balance economic, social, and environmental values and benefits. When it came to the issue of age rotation and allowable cut that was sustainable, I had great reservations. Mr. Sessions, I believe he's an economist, was asked to model harvest and revenues that could be expected from different age rotations. He had to consider high-risk sites, endangered species, disease, riparian zones, salmon set-asides, recreation, all of those things. Once again, I was very suspicious. I do not recall the exact number in board feet or the exact dollar of revenue projected from the model. However, I do remember that the Department of Forestry's testimony, and I believe it was in 2003 in the Natural Resource Ways and Means Committee, was that the model output was off by a mark of approximately 40%. Chair Roblin, you and I can get two lagers, a case of beer, drink the beer, and guess closer than that. Models are only as good as what information goes into the model. Recently, Chair Roblin, you carried HJM-5. This resolution urged Congress to extend the Secure Rural Schools Community Self-Determination Act of 2000 through the fiscal year of 2016 and fund the act with mandatory continuing appropriation. Historically, Congress has shared revenue generated from the federal lands with local governments in recognition of the fact that federal ownership of the forest lands deprives counties of revenues they would have if the land had been privately owned, and that the counties also provided services that benefit this land as compensation for the land being exempt from taxation and for local services. Congress shares a portion of the revenue from this forest land. In other words, we expect the federal government to keep its promise and obligations. And you carried that bill and did a great job. I think it passed unanimously on the House floor. Every one of you, I believe, voted for it. Now, the counties are asking Oregon to keep its agreement and promise and abide by that agreement. Using adaptive management, we can, in fact, manage the Tillamook and Clatsop forests in an environmentally sound and sustainable manner. In closing, I just want you to remember that Oregon had the first forest practice rules. They have been updated over 30 times and will continue to be changed as new science tells forest managers how to better manage our Oregon state forests. Thank you.
Thank you. I think both of you have committees, so...
Thank you. I appreciate this. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32. And I handed over the gavel on my committee, and they're hearing a longer bill at first to give me a little time here because Rep. Krieger also needs to go. And I just wanted to say that I'm here today in support of this bill because I'm so worried about what would happen if we went again against our Forest Trust Land counties and the... I can't remember which court. I want to say that there were two court cases beside the Crabtree, then the most recently. We are under the gun here to honor these agreements, and that is to when. And I'm not going to give the history. That's going to come later from I think former Representative Josie and former Commissioner Labhart from Tillamook County. But I just wanted to also say that I understand a little bit about forestry. We have about 120 acres in a small woodland. We manage our forestry very differently than some people, our forests very differently than some people, but I'm very proud to say that we have some of the best example of temperate rainforest on the whole North Coast. And we have a multi-species forest. We have multi-species animals, birds, all kinds of living things. And I'm so picky that when we do log, we use vegetable oil as hydraulic fluid. So that's where I'm coming from. And I wanted to say this forest management plan adopted in 2001, the harvest levels dropped significantly from the levels that were promised. And you heard Representative Krieger say some of this, so I'm not going to repeat a lot of it. But my counties, schools, and constituents have been waiting a long time for the forest to mature. You all know about the Tillamook burns in the 30s. When those burns were replanted, those burn areas were replanted. They were replanted with Douglas fir that's now in maturity and it's ready to go. The forest management plan allows for varied uses. And if you go to the Tillamook Forest, and I'm picking on the Tillamook Forest because it's the one most people know most about. I have the Clatsop Forest, too. But you go there, and you can ride quads, you can ride horses, you can walk, you can fish, you can hike, you can hunt, you can look at birds, whatever. There's a lot of things going on at the same time. When I remember well a tour we took, and a former senator who was very much... against logging, basically, went there and was going to view the clear cut. And I think this is the most important statement I'm going to make today is the term clear cut. The state concerns a clear cut in a state forestry plan is not the slicked off, all trees cut version that some people see when they go to the coast. And that's important because when we showed this senator the clear cut, he's looking right at it, and he says, so where's the clear cut? And I said, you're looking at it. And he says, no, where's the clear cut? I'm talking about the clear cut. And I said, it's right over there. And he looked at it, and he said, that's a clear cut? And I said, yeah, according to the state, that's a clear cut. So I wanted to rectify any erroneous thoughts that what we're trying to do with this bill is to clear cut the entire Tillamook and Clatsop Forest, because that's what's out there, and I really think that needs to be made clear. Finally, I would just like to say it's not going to reduce the recreational activity that's already happening on our state forest lands. That will still go on. Likewise, it will not adversely affect the environment. Forests are managed to be healthy. in order to have a healthy forest, you need to do some cutting, and that's true. I would implore everybody to watch the OPB DVD we were all given here in the House. I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. I was going to hold it up. But that is one of the best pieces of information about how Oregon runs its forestry program that I've ever seen. And I think it's very fair and straightforward and factual. And I hope that you'll all look at it if you get a chance, about 20 minutes. And I think it goes very well with this bill. And will tell you exactly what we're talking about. So without further ado, if anybody has questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11. I want to let the committee know that as currently drafted, I oppose the bill, and I want to describe briefly why. I believe that one of the most important assets that Oregon has in the area of managing its forests and the potential for managing other forests is an independent State Board of Forestry. That is charged with scientific management of our state forests, which include a number of uses. Now, historically, and because of the way in which we acquired the state forests, these lands are expected to produce revenue and timber, and they do. If you will recall, the legislature several years ago, and I believe it was in 2003 when I was on the Revenue Committee, passed a bill against my opposition that would have had the effect of increasing the timber production on the state forests against the recommendation of the Board of Forestry and of the scientifically based management practices that they had been following at the recommendation of the experts at Oregon State University. The governor vetoed that bill. The next year, there was an election and an election held in the state of Oregon that would have set aside some portions of the state forest as environmental reserves. That election failed. I think partly because by luck and partly because of good planning, the Board of Forestry escaped two opposite kinds of bullets. The first one would have required overproduction of timber, and the second one would have required inappropriate locking up of lands which should be used in part, among other things, for timber production. So I think it's very important for the committee as it considers this bill to consider what the effect of the adoption of the language that would require that the lands be managed primarily for timber production to produce revenue for county schools and so forth would have on the actual operation of the Board of Forestry as it manages these lands. I believe that the land should be managed on the basis of a balanced process in which timber production is an important but only one of many issues that are of concern to the board. It should be balanced. It should be based on the best scientific processes available and our knowledge generally. And I'm not an expert in this area, but I know that our knowledge of the best practices for management of forests is improving on a yearly basis and is far better than it was in the past. We know more about how to do it. Now, why am I interested in this? I'm interested in it for several reasons. One of them is for the long-term sustained utilization of this land for the benefit of the state budget and also for the benefit of the budgets of the counties gave this land to the state in the first place for the state's management. But there's another reason, and I think it in the long term may be a compelling one. And I think it's wonderful that Representative Krieger has already mentioned the issue that I'm concerned about, and that is that the federal government has essentially abdicated its responsibility as the major landlord in Oregon for the management of its production forests. If you come to my district, I can show you Bureau of Land Management lands which have essentially been abandoned by the federal government. They overplanted these lands 30 years ago. It's time for them to be thinned. It was time some time ago for them to be thinned. Nothing has been done. They've essentially abandoned the land. Why? Part of the reason is politics. The federal government has been unable to figure out how to deal with the competing interests of timber production on the one hand and environmental values and needs on the other. And the result is a disaster, that in fact neither of these values is being met. I believe the state should be very, very careful before it goes into and tries to deal with the balance that we currently have with the management of our lands. Now, if amendment of the law is necessary because of lawsuits that have changed the value, the way in which these laws are interpreted, that may make sense and it may be a reasonable thing to do. But I think it's extremely important for us to be very, very careful of doing anything that would lead to a significant difference in the way in which the land is being managed solely for the purpose of increasing our current revenue and the county's current revenue from these lands. I believe that in a few years' time, maybe even sooner rather than later, we ought to be approaching the federal government about a management contract, allowing us, through the Board of Forestry, to manage these essentially abandoned federal production timber production lands for the kinds of on the kind of scientific best use, best practices basis that we have been attempting to manage the state forest lands. If the Board of Forestry is allowed to continue the work that it has been doing to do that, we increase our chances of actually getting that to happen. That, of course, could help to deal with some of the fiscal crisis some of our counties are currently in that I'm sure the members of the committee are very familiar with. It could also generate some royalties for the federal government, and it would significantly increase the number of jobs available in communities based in the areas where federal forests, production forests currently exist, and increase the health of the forest, because our practices are vastly better than the ones that the federal government is currently applying. So I urge the committee to be very cautious as it addresses this issue. As the bill now stands, and as I currently understand it, I'm opposed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present on this bill.
Any questions for this panel? And then we'll let them.
May I just add one? I failed to mention one point. I wanted to let people know that as this bill was being drafted, I think it ran by me a few times, and I'd look at it and say I really think we need to put in the bill statement or language that addresses this other needs too, so it wasn't just the one need, and to make it very clear that this is a very multi-valued piece in the forest, but that the main, we needed to stick with what the law was and what the agreements were, the federal agreements, the legal lawsuit, all that was, so that it had, but also mentioned the in need for the environmental amenities, the recreation uses, and all the other uses. And that was important to me because that restates what the forest management plan really does in that sense. So thank you.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have two more representatives. Representative Witt can come forward, and Representative Burley, I think, can speak from where he's at.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt, State Representative from House District 31. I'm appearing today neither for or against the bill, but rather as an attempt to try and focus some of your considerations on both processes and outcomes dealing with the definition of greatest permanent value, the development of the Northwest Forest Management Plan, and the management of our state forests. First, regarding the bill, I am a personal advocate of increased timber harvest and revenues, and because of that, I would admit that this bill probably serves those short-term interests of mine. However, as a proponent of sustainability, I also believe that the bill starts ringing what I have casually referred to as the China Syndrome's alarm system. We may be headed towards a meltdown here in terms of process. And in order to, of course, prevent any kind of system breakdown like that, we have to know what to fix. What are we after? And I intend to address that, as I say, through both process and outcomes. First, consider the definition of greatest permanent value and the process that surrounded the development of that. I would have to say that as a former Board of Forestry member and on the board at the time the definition was developed, that our initial attempt was one that that suited me individually very well. As someone, again, who is interested in timber harvest and resulting revenues, it suited my purposes. However, one of my colleagues on the board at that time halted our development of the definition out of the interest in trying to make it comport with the principles of sustainability, that it balance economic, environmental, and social concerns. When that process was halted, I entered into the revised definition kicking and protesting because I'd gotten what I needed, and I didn't feel that I needed anything more. But after several months of work, that process produced the present definition, which I think is vastly better than the initial one that we came up with, and from which I learned, I think, three very important lessons. The first being that consensus decision-making and a balance of values, again, sustainability, economic, social, and environmental, built a very strong definition in terms of the public's acceptance. I emphasize acceptance. I didn't say love. I didn't say they embraced it. Acceptance, to the point that no one disliked it enough to have to go out of the system and that they could, in fact, accept it. Secondly, that both natural and human forces shape both the forest and forest management challenges. This has necessitated the department and board's adoption of a system of what is referred to as adaptive management, characterized on the one hand as a system of constant improvement, and on the other, one that is able to deal with dynamic changes in management, in order to always keep those three values balanced across the landscape and over time. It's not to suggest that every square inch or every square meter of forest that is managed is always balanced at any given point in time, but rather when the whole forest is taken into consideration over a series of decades, that balance is achieved. Thirdly, that from that balance is derived the public's permission for both the Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry to continue to manage our state's forests, which we are a paragon in terms of both our management and the standards to which we manage, unsurpassed probably anywhere in the world. Now, the conclusion I draw here is that House Bill 2975 is symptomatic of some slippage in the public's permission to continue its management, at least among the proponents who have the bill, who found it necessary to go around the Board of Forestry in order to meet their needs. This is what has begun that alarm system to start ringing. Now, the outcome in terms of the greatest permanent value definition, I would like to talk about the attempt to maintain that balance. The present definition has created no winners and no losers because it maintains that balance. But I would urge each and every one of you to take a look at the bill and its definition. And it is very difficult to draw a conclusion other than this one does create winners. Those of us, myself included, who are interested in timber harvest and revenue are winners. In fact, the bill tells us that that's what it's destined to do. And by omission of those who have environmental interests, I can arrive at no other conclusion than that folks with those concerns may very well be losers. If that is true, then the bill creates an outsiders group. And at any point that you create someone who was an equal part of the consideration and now is placed on the outside, they have every motivation to try and get back into the inside circle again. How would that be achieved? I suggest to you that our court system may be that avenue. If that were to happen, then, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I do believe that we are going to revisit the timber wars of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s here in our own state forests. Now, the wars themselves were and would be bad enough, but in addition, I suggest to you that even worse than that would be the ensuing gridlock. If we were to gridlock our state forests, then that would spell the end to Oregon's ability to manage its state forests better than anybody else. We would be no better off than the gridlock that currently exists in our federal forests. Now, there are a few things that occur, Mr. Chairman, very few things that occur in a vacuum, and I suggest to you that the same is true of House Bill 2975. In terms of the process for developing the Northwest Forest Management Plan, the Board of Forestry used a comparative analysis where we adopted or we prepared comparative management models that suggested how much timber should be cut and when, the succession steps and the forest structure that should be grown over time, the amount of set-asides for various values, et cetera, et cetera. These comparative models were based on the best information that was available to us at the time. Now, what was the outcome from all of this? With the benefit of hindsight, our utilization of the best information that was available at the time and our public rollout of the comparative models, I think, doomed the political sustainability of the Northwest Forest Management Plan. Specifically, at that time, the best available information was not adequately ground-truthed. Why? Like every other state agency, we simply didn't have the money that was necessary to do that adequate ground truthing. We didn't know exactly what the forest conditions were out on the forest floor. As a result, when it was ground truth, the volume became something considerably less than what we had initially modeled. Secondly, we relied on scientifically precise set of figures, volumes per each comparative model that was rolled out. That was another mistake. We would have been better suited to use perhaps a political science approach where it was percentages, a comparison model was compared. We get a little more timber harvest from this model and a little less from this one than the others, rather than a volume figure. Why is this? Because at the moment that you state the specific volume, that's where the public goes to. That becomes their reality. And that was a mistake in the manner in which we rolled this out. And I have to say that I do believe one of the conclusions that I would draw here would be that mistake in how we rolled it out is in part part of the reason why the end run is now being done around the Board of Forestry and we have legislation here rather than the Board of Forestry deciding what definitional changes would be appropriate with a forest management plan. Another conclusion that I would draw, and while it's perhaps not apropos to this bill, I think our three-legged stool is growing in another appendage here, and that's political sustainability. And while it's really a subset of the social component, if you take a look at what's happening, I think this is a perfect example. That bill is before us because we have it. What we have done to this point was not politically sustainable. We have to consider that component as well. Most alarming, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and the reason really why I'm here today is the question of how and who manages our state forests. In the post House Bill 2975 era, or post any era where this legislative body decides that it is going to take up the day-to-day management of our state's forests. Passage of any legislation, I don't care whether it's good, bad, and different, as long as it deals with the management of our forests, then I believe this legislature has taken over the management role of our state's forests and in essence has sidelined our state's Board of Forestry. Now the alarm bells are really ringing. Now I think we're on the way to a meltdown. I think that would be a terrible mistake. The management of our forests, our state forests, will suffer should that happen. We are a legislative body. I don't believe that we have the same kind of time or expertise to manage our state forests that the Board of Forestry does, nor do I think that we have the ability to manage, given the makeup of the legislature. We don't have an ability to do a short-term turnaround, nor do we have the ability on a daily, weekly, short-term basis to perform adaptive management. We legislate, Mr. Chairman. The Board of Forestry actively manages our state forests. They do the best job in the world, and I urge each and every one of you to charge the Board of Forestry if we need a new definition, to come up with a new definition. If we need to change the volume of harvest, then charge them with doing that. But make the Board of Forestry do their job. It is critically important to the future management of our state's forests.
Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Listen. Okay. Representative Berlin.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the opportunity very much to join the committee of the dais today. I actually have a bit of a luxury here because I get to respond to some of the comments I've heard. I didn't really come with any prepared comments. A couple things. The way I read this bill, I mean, the state law already says that the state forester shall manage the land so as to secure the greatest permanent value. My understanding is the issue is how is that phrase being interpreted, and hence one or more court cases, which I don't know all the details about, but I'm sure witnesses will fill us in. And I also want to call to the committee's attention that this very same issue is going on in the state of Washington right now over the DNR, Department of Natural Resource Lands up there, where they have, I believe, DNR manages about 11 different types of trust lands for Washington, higher education, and others. And there are similar lawsuits there, and it's all over the interpretation of that trust mandate. The governor has a bill, Senate Bill 5098, which would allow the state to acquire timberlands in trust for higher education. And I've testified on that bill the same thing, that if it's to move forward, I think we have to be absolutely as crystal clear in the mandate language as possible so that we avoid these issues in these court cases and everybody understands what the purpose is. I don't believe that this is an end run because, as I said, it's in the law already that they shall manage to the greatest permanent value. What this is trying to do is clarify what that rule says or what that definition is. And I'll close with this, Mr. Chair, if I may. Rather coincidental, I think. Tomorrow, the Oregon Society of American Foresters is going to be in the building, and many of us received today a packet from them, including some of their policy statements. And I'd like to just read a portion of this one. The Oregon Society of American Foresters, this is their position on commercial timber harvest on public lands in Oregon. The Society supports commercial timber harvest as an appropriate, objective, and primary tool for healthy, sustainable forests on public lands. Most of these lands are affected by laws that allow or mandate sustainable commercial harvest with resource management planning. And it continues by saying that as the nation's leading lumber producer, Oregon's wood products industry brings substantial income to the state and employs about 52,000 workers, a level comparable to the high-tech manufacturing sector. Wood products employment is especially important in rural communities where other high-wage jobs are few, and it also remains significant even in Oregon's urban areas. Basic industries like forest products also generate significant wealth both directly and far beyond the industry itself through a strong economic multiplier. Government payments to counties in lieu of timber harvest often do not achieve comparably broad and enduring benefits. Given their location, productivity, and size, public forest lands have a key role in commercial timber production and employment throughout the state, even where other values are emphasized. Commercial timber harvest is widely recognized as an essential component of sustainable forestry and local communities near forests. Harvests from state forest lands, for example, generated $58 million for Oregon counties and nearly $10 million for Oregon schools in 2006. And, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is what I think is the most important part of this whole debate. We have a vast, wonderful, renewable natural resource that I believe we should be managing in a way that we're producing jobs and producing income and helping to pay for our schools and transportation needs, which many people in this building right now are trying to figure out how to cover in light of the fact that secure rural schools, if we're lucky, we'll get for one more year. And then after that, we've got a huge void to fill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Burley? Okay. Our next group, and we have some panels that are coming. We will, again, continue with a group of elected officials. Now we're moving to the county. So we're going to start with Tim Josie from Tillamook, Mark Lavert, who is the Tillamook County Commissioner and former ODF District Forester, Paul, how do you say your last name?
Levesque.
And Mark Rasmussen, all part of that group. And if you have prepared testimony, we would really appreciate when you don't have to read it, and it can just kind of paraphrase part of it, because we will all have a chance to read it all over, and there's a lot of other people who would like to speak, so as much as we can.
Mr. Chair, I've got my prepared testimony has a bunch of slides on it.
Okay.
And I'd appreciate it if the members had it before I get started, okay. And I'd like to lead off.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, my name is Tim Josie. I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner, and I'm the chair of the Council of Forest Trustland Counties. The first thing I'd like to do is talk about at the bill itself. This is at the request of Tim Josie. I just didn't catch that until yesterday. It's really at the request of the 15 trust counties, of which I'm the chair. I visited with all of you, except I don't believe I visited with you, Representative Burley. I really did appreciate your comments. Thank you very much. And I talked to you quite a bit about why we're in the pickle that we're in, and then talked to you about the history of the lands and some of the lawsuits that we've had. I'm not going to do that today because I don't want to repeat myself. And then there are other members that are going to be going into the various facets of those categories in a great deal of detail. Today I want to talk about need and what this means to the rural counties. I've got a son that is a freshman in college this year over at Southern Oregon University, and when he was born, for the next 4 years, I bought into the baccalaureate bonds, and that It's about $1,500 to $2,000 that I invested in, and they matured every first one at 18, the next one at 19, age 18, 19, that sort of thing, and at $5,000 a piece. And then when the college savings plan came along, I jumped on that and took advantage of that to the fullest extent that I could. Folks, that trust that I have with the state is helping to pay my son's education. And that's a trust that I have with the state of Oregon. Well, the county commissioners, some 70 years ago, when they deeded this land to the state of Oregon, it was in a trust relationship that has been quantified twice in courts. And the primary purpose of these lands has been and should be today timber production. And we've been waiting all of these years for this trust to mature. And in Tillamook's case, it's the state forest is coming online. It's now maturing. And so we've been waiting all of this time for this trust to mature so that we could recognize the economic vibrancy that this would create. And guess what? Now the state is taking a big chunk of it away from us. That's fundamentally unfair, and we think it's fundamentally illegal. So I wanted to start with those comments. Now, talking about Tillamook County, if you could look at the first chart, you can see, if you look at our Tillamook County General Fund, you can see that state timber revenues are a big part of our budget. It's about 24.5% of our general fund budget. Our general fund budget is about just a hair under $16 million. And then if you look at the next chart, I think this one's very telling. The next chart shows all of the counties and their permanent property tax rates. And you can see Tillamook County's very low. It's about $1.50 a thousand. Well, when ballot measure 5 came along, and then following that ballot measure 47, which became ballot measure 50, it froze in those property tax rates. And then it only allows the assessed value to go up at a maximum of 3% a year. It actually can be a negative number if the bottom falls out of the housing market. So what you're seeing is cities and counties all across Oregon struggling today, and I think that there's a very real jeopardy as time goes by that we're not going to be able to make ends meet. Now, I just drew up a little illustration of what ballot measure 50, 47 /50, does for us in terms of raising property tax revenues. We have a subdivision in Neatarts, which is one of our villages in Tillamook County. It's going to produce ultimately 154 new homes, and they're going to be valued at about $350,000 a piece. When they're all sold, the real market value will be $53,900,000. The assessed value will be 38, roughly speaking, is actually lower than this now. The new numbers are lower, but let's just stay with this. 38,754,000. Out of that, with our property tax rate and with the assessed value, that pencils out to $58,131 a year. That doesn't even buy one sheriff deputy. That doesn't pay for the additional cost to our schools, to our roads, or anything else. And so the bottom line is, when we start talking about economic development, we can't grow our way out of this problem. And when I say we, I'm talking about every city and county in the state of Oregon with these artificially locked-in low property tax rates, especially the ones that are very low. And then I will submit to you that a number of these low property tax rates are because we were used to federal and state timber revenues, and we didn't need to raise our property tax rates. Now the bottom has fallen out of our federal forest, and now we're not realizing to any appreciable extent what we should be getting out of our state forest. And so we're stuck with these lower property tax rates and no recourse. Now, if you can go to the next chart, you will see that in Tillamook County, 64% of our land base is in public ownership. That's a lot. That's land that's taken completely out of our economic base. But out of that, if you look, 44% of that is state forests. 50% of all the state forests in Oregon are in Tillamook County. 30% of them are in Clatsop County. That's why all the Clatsop County commissioners are here, except for one that couldn't make it with a last-minute conflict. This is a big deal for us. It's a big deal for the economy, economies in our communities, and for our family wage jobs. First of all, we lose our federal forest harvest. Now, with our federal forest harvest, we can grow on our federal forest lands about 10 billion board feet per year in the Northwest. We harvested 4.5 billion board feet per year in the 1980s. Today, we harvest less than 397 million board feet per year. What has that created? When I was the president of the Association of Oregon Counties, I traveled all across Oregon, and I looked at many of the rural counties, and they would take me and show me that the foundations where mills were at one time. Our rural economies in Oregon are in big trouble. 60,000 workers left the industry in the 1990s. Half of those disappeared completely from the work rolls. Of those who remain, half ended up in the service sector. Now, if you go to the next chart, you can see what has happened. This is average earnings per job. The flat black line is the United States at 100%. And you can see that above that is Multnomah County and Washington County. And so they're doing better than the United States as an average. But if you look at Tillamook and non-metro and Clatsop County, we're about 30% below the national average, and if you look at the metro area, we're closer to 40% below them. That's the disparity that you folks need to be thinking about when you look at this bill and why this is so important to us. Now the counties are in jeopardy of losing our federal forest revenues safety net following next year, as Representative Burley mentioned. It's like a 1-2 punch. The first thing that they do is they take away our family wage jobs. Those are gone. And now they're going to take away the revenues that the counties need to provide the services for the citizens that are living there. And so that's the federal government has reneged on its deal. Now we have the state government reneging on its deal with our state forest lands. Tillamook County has been waiting a long time for our trust lands to mature. We're a poor country, and we want to catch up with the rest of the state. Now, if you'll look at the next slide and then quickly go to the next one, I pulled out a couple of charts that were produced statewide and looking at each county. The first one is Tillamook County medium income is $7,700 below the state average. And then the next one after that is free and reduced lunch eligibility is students that are eligible for free or reduced lunches. The cost of lunches is about 53-54% in Tillamook County. So poverty reigns in Tillamook County, and our state forest lands is a way that we can handle this. Now, you're going to hear, and you have heard, that state timber practices, and especially if this bill passes, that we're going to impair the recovery of salmon. I'd like to have you look at the next chart. I pulled this off of the internet, but it was actually the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. There was a representative that came to Tillamook, and they showed the whole document, and there was one page that really caught my eye. Now, you'll see two lines. The first one with all the orange or red, that was the first study that was conducted by the National Marine Fisheries Service in 1997, and they were looking at the viability of coho salmon. And you can see there were, in terms of marine habitat, fishery harvests, and all that stuff, all the alarms or the indicators were at high in terms of risk factor. Then in 2005, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, working with the governor, they took another look at our coho viability. And ESU is evolutionarily significant unit, if you want to know. And you look, all of the indicators are low, except for two. The first one is marine habitat, and that's ocean conditions. We have no impact on that, no way to affect that. The second one is stream complexity, and people will go, aha, there it is, stream complexity. But if you look at, dig down deeper, what they're saying is it's the stream complexity down in the lowlands. Across the nation, 85% of our wetlands have been drained and taken away, and it's no different in Tillamook County or anywhere else. That's where the problem is. Coho salmon, they go up and they spawn, and then the babies come down and they spend a full year down in the marshlands. And so what we need to do is fix our marshlands. This is an indicator that we're not having a problem with our state forest lands or our federal forest lands or our private forest lands. You're going to hear tales about high stream temperatures. Well, folks, yes, 64 degrees is you never want to get above that. I sat on a committee back here talking about stream temperatures when I was in the legislature, and we spent the full committee talking about this, and nobody really knows what past history has been. When the but what we do know is when the temperature gets too high, the fish go into deeper water. What we do know is that the Tillamook Forest does not have the big, tall, grand trees that it needs to provide the shade that it should. But that was because of the Tillamook burn. What we do know is that those trees in those riparian areas are protected. They're not going to be cut. They will eventually provide ample shade as they mature, as long as we don't have a forest fire. And then if we don't manage properly, we will have a forest fire. So if you'll move to the next chart, the Oregon Department of Forestry always, at the right time of the year when the fry and smolt migrate out of the streams, they actually do counts. And you can see the Chinook fry migrants, and this is for the Little South Fork of the Kilchis River. It's 10 miles long, and it's almost all state forest lands. You can see that they're doing very well. Coho fry, it goes all over the map, but then primarily the big issue with them is marine habitat. They stay within a couple hundred miles of shore, and so upwelling is a big issue in terms of their viability, and I think that that's the reason why you see that disparity. You're also going to hear that we are harvesting more state timber now than we have ever before, and again, that's true. And if you could look to the next chart, you will see that for 05, and this is for the three Northwest districts, you can see for 05 it was 205.6 million board feet. But if you look at the chart, you see it goes down. And so the reason why it's up there at that level is because Representative Susan Morgan, when she was in the majority, put a budget note on it that raised the level above what the implementation plan called for, and that budget note has sunsetted a long time ago, and the numbers are going down. The second thing that I want to say is that they ought to be higher than that. They ought to be higher than that, substantially higher than that. We were told that we were going to be receiving 279 million board feet per year, and now we're closer to 180 million board feet per year. The timber industry, I mean, if the Board of Forestry managed these lands with the Forest Practices Act, it'd be closer to 320. And so you subtract 320 from 180, and there's a heck of a disparity. So anyway, I'm going to finish by saying that if you look at the second page of my testimony, we do have some proposed amendments. We've talked to a number of people, talked to the Speaker of the House, and he said, Tim, what I'm concerned about is a boom and bust period. I said, that is not our intent. And so we put some language in there to fix that. And then we heard from others that there needs to be some provisions in there about protecting the environmental and social values. And so we put some language in there. You'll notice that it says, drafted by retired state forester Jim Brown. Well, that's not entirely true, but there were three of us that put this together. And so this is, and this is a bill, these are amendments, are language that he supports. He's also upset with what's happening. He couldn't be here today. He's on vacation. Otherwise, he would be here to support it. But if it comes back and he's back, I can guarantee you he'll be here and support this bill. So what the new language says, and I won't read the whole thing, but it says these forests are managed primarily for sustainable timber production over the long term, to produce revenue for the county schools and local taxing districts that receive revenue from these lands, while protecting other social, economic, and environmental values. And one of the last things I'll say is that we took this language, right, except for the red stuff that we added, the amendments, we took it right out of Senate Bill 98, governor's bill. We figured if this was good enough for the governor, it was good enough for us. And so I ask you to please support this bill. Please bring it to a work session. Get it to the floor. This is the right thing to do. And you can help the ailing rural counties by supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Oh, okay. We'll wait for the rest of the panel. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Levesque. I'm the management analyst for Tillamook County, basically chief of staff for the Board of Commissioners. But really the reason I'm here is that I've spent most of my 31-year career working on state forest issues. I worked for the law firm that litigated the Crabtree Valley case as a legal assistant. I've written a two-volume history about the state forests, and what I'm here today, in addition to asking for your support on this bill, is to say that what the bill is really all about is codifying the historical record that exists on these lands. There is a long and rich history of legislative vision and intent that timber production was the primary purpose of these lands. It begins back in the 1930s when Governor Charles Sprague and County Judge Guy Boyington came to the legislature with this idea for state forests. The lands would be acquired from the counties to produce a forest crop. Well, the etiology of that term in the context of the times was much like a farmer harvesting wheat, but with protecting water and other values. Obviously, we've come a long way since those days, but there's no doubt in looking at the record, the primary purpose of these lands is for timber production. I have, and I don't know if it's been distributed to you yet, yes, a paper that tries to capture a portion of my 1,400-page, two-volume history. And I know you're busy, but if you, at some point, could look at the last 10 pages, you can really open it anywhere to get a flavor of what I'm talking about. After the 1930s, it took more than a decade for the state to acquire these lands. The state did so by amendments to the statute that made the revenue piece more attractive to the counties. Obviously, the state believed that these lands could be managed and harvested for timber production and produce revenues, and it was on that basis that the counties deeded them. There are representations that they would be held in trust, but I'm not going to get into that relationship issue. I think the point to be made today is that this has always been the purpose for which the lands have been managed. In the late 1940s, we had a deputy state treasurer, Fred Paulus, who came up with the idea for reforestation. At that point, the lands had been ravaged by three fires, and many of the lands in other counties were cut over. The idea was a constitutional amendment to reforest the lands. The legislature embraced that idea, submitted it to the voters in November 1948, and Oregonians passed it. If you look at the record of that legislation, it's clear the idea was to replant these lands, to harvest the timber, to provide jobs for Oregonians and other amenity benefits while providing revenues to the counties. In the 1950s, the counties worked with the legislature again to figure out a way to not only protect the value of these lands, but enhance their value for future timber production. In 1951, the counties agreed with the legislature for an amendment to reduce their share of revenue to create a fund to pay state fire suppression costs. Later on, this fund was amended to provide more money to the state for fire protection costs. In 1969, a further amendment for intensive management. The thought and vision of the legislature and the counties at that time was by investing more in these lands in terms of fertilization and other techniques for intensive management, you have a higher return in the future. In 1969, the state agreed with the counties that the county should pay back the state's costs of reforestation. The bond program cost $18 million. $15 million of that went on the ground for reforestation. The rest was bond costs and coupon interests and those sorts of things. The state, over the course of that program, had put $14 million of general fund into redeeming those bonds. The counties agreed to pay that back, and this past July completed that repayment obligation. I don't think the state would have asked for the payback, nor would the counties have agreed to make that payback, unless there was the understanding and belief that these lands are there to produce timber revenues as the primary purpose. In the 1970s, as the lands began to mature, the Board of Forestry developed policies that make it clear that timber was the primary purpose of these lands. I'd like to read just one excerpt from the paper I prepared, and it's a preamble to the last management plan that was adopted by the Board of Forestry before the current plan was put in place. And it says, ORS 530-050 directs that the state forester, under the authority of the State Board of Forestry, shall manage the lands to secure their greatest permanent value to the state. The basic goal is to optimize the sustained contribution made by state forests to the people of Oregon by maximizing growth and harvest of forest products, consistent with the financial resources available and consistent with the need to protect soil, streams, wildlife habitat, recreational opportunities, and other environmental values. Timber production is recognized as a primary use of state forest lands, but due consideration is given to other values, including water, wildlife, and recreation. This bill is about what state forest lands are to be used for. It's not about how you get there. The Board of Forestry is charged, and the state forester are charged with the management of how you get there. I think Representative Burley hit the nail on the head earlier when he said we need to clarify the policy statement in the statute. Clearly, an important reason for doing that is it reflects the practices and the understandings of this body, of the counties, and for that matter, Oregonians throughout the history of these lands. That's an important fact and a persuasive reason, the persuasive reason why this should be done. With that, I'll take any questions if you have any.
Any questions, or we can go on? Let's go on. Yes.
Mackie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Mark Labhart, and I am chair of the Tillamook County Commission. I'd like to start off with a little bit of history and credibility, or trying to establish some credibility with a group to speak before you today. Prior to my retirement, I spent 34 years with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I spent 20 years as the manager of the majority of the Tillamook State Forest. So I know that forest intimately. I have a lot of love for that forest. I care deeply about that forest, and I believe that the Oregon Department of Forestry is a tremendously good agency and is trying to do the best job that they can with the constraints that they operate under. So in those 34 years with the Department of Forestry and 20 years as manager of the Tillamook State Forest, I believe, and still do, that state forest lands should be managed primarily for the sustainable timber production over the long term to produce revenue to the counties, to the schools, and that's been left out. A significant portion of the revenue goes to the school districts that offsets directly general fund, directly offsets the general fund contribution, and other taxing districts that receive revenue from such lands while, and this is all in one sentence, it's not a stop, while protecting other social, economic, and environmental values of the forest. So what's the problem that needs to be fixed? The forest management plan has not delivered on the harvest levels as promised, and I think if Jim Brown was here, who was one of the long-term standing state foresters and man I tremendously respect, would say the same thing to you. The forest management plan has not delivered on the harvest levels promised to the counties by the original framers of the forest management plan. And it's because of the way that the Board of Forestry and ODF are interpreting the greatest permanent value rule. This bill clarifies the purpose of the lands by clarifying the term greatest permanent value and gives clearer direction to the Board of Forestry and the department on how the lands are to be managed. And as Representative Witt said, and I'd like to quote him, to fix the slippage, because that's what's happening, is there some slippage. And Commissioner Josie showed you that slippage in the last 3 years is starting, the levels are going down, and I think the trend is continuing. The legislature's role, and I think Representative Burley did a good job of capturing this, but I just want to capture it for myself for you, is this is no end run around the Board of Forestry. Do not believe that. This is not an end run around the Board of Forestry. The legislature sets the statutory direction. The legislature is the body that provides the guidance to the Board of Forestry. The Board of Forestry sets the policy direction in terms of how they administer OARs, administrative rules. And then the state forester is the one who sets the harvest levels. The legislature should not be involved in harvest levels. They don't have the expertise, they don't have the knowledge or the skills to do that. That's the state forester. But the legislature sets that clear policy direction to fix what I perceive as the slippage that is occurring. So why is there a need to amend ORS 530050 to clarify the intent of the greatest permanent value rule? And I'll give you just a couple quick examples. ODF harvest levels were modeled again in the $280 million board foot range in the three North Coast districts, and that's in Clatsop, Tillamook, Columbia, and a little bit of Washington County. By the original framers of the forest management plan, estimated timber harvests in fiscal year 2007 are 193 million board feet to be sold. That is 87 million board feet less, or a 31% reduction from what the original framers of the forest management plan said. So now let's put that in perspective. The 31% reduction amounts to $30 million. If you use an average stumpage price of $350 per 1,000 board feet, with the majority of that funding, the majority, roughly two-thirds, going back to fund schools, vital county services like our sheriff's department, community college, the DA's office, the tax department, the surveyor's office, the justice court, emergency management, the ESD, and even our rural fire districts. $30 million is the slippage that occurred from the original framers of the plan. In fiscal year 2008, the estimated sell volume for the three North Coast districts, what I call the big three, is even lower. It's 186 million board feet. That's a 94 million board foot reduction, or $33 million lost to vital county services. And I'm not even talking about the family wage jobs that are lost as a result of that reduction in harvest, because those jobs are the ones that are out there working and producing the tax revenue. So what happens after you pass it, 2975? The forest management plan needs to be fine-tuned. I am not proposing to eliminate the forest management plan or to gut it or to get rid of the forest management plan. The concepts are valid. Structure-based management is a good idea. It provides a broad perspective on managing forests. I think it's how federal forests ought to be managed. It is a tremendously good thought process that went into it, scientifically sound-based. Do not throw the forest management plan out. Do not let somebody tell you to do that. You need to fix the slippage, though. So, the forest management plan does allow, it's written right in the document, it does allow, when new information is made available, and you heard Representative Witt talk about that, the inventory, and he was on the Board of Forestry. The inventory was not good. I was there. I continually said, our inventory is not good, and the Department of Forestry has redone the inventory. The inventory shows a different amount of volume out there, so you ought to fix the plan based on that. The disease effects. There's a disease called Swiss needle cast that's having an impact on the forest. There's a thing called salmon anchor habitats that have been put into place that has impacted the forest in my. There are what they call operability constraints. Can you get to the timber? Can you not get to the timber? Where can you harvest? Where can you not harvest? And so what we need, which is allowed in the forest management plan, is legislative clarification of the greatest permanent value rule to adequately reflect what the intent of this law is. And you are the ones that establish that, not the Board of Forestry. You tell the Board of Forestry, and then they implement your policy. Harvest levels can then be adjusted by the state forester for the long-term, and this is a key point, long-term sustainable timber production, while protecting the social environmental values of adjusting for this complex structure to place over time. It's not say, well, let's run out there and harvest a whole bunch of timber right now, and then we'll worry about it later. This is long-term, sustainable, forever timber production that protects the environment at the same time. So what does not change with the passage of this bill? You're going to hear people say, oh, it's going to tremendously affect recreation. Recreation on the Tillamook State Forest has been doing nothing but increasing with the implementation of structure-based management. And if you approve the Department of Forestry's budget, you'll see an increase in the amount of recreation. Last year, in 2006, there were 31,000 people camped in the Tillamook State Forest. And they are very proud of that. And recreation needs to continue on the Tillamook State Forest. There are 71.5 miles of trails, and many of those were built in the last 10 years. They'll continue to be used, and there'll be more trails added to the forest, and people will see what a good, well-managed forest looks like. Clarifying the greatest permanent value will not adversely affect the environment, and don't let somebody tell you that it will. The forest management plan continues to exceed the requirements of the Forest Practices Act. It should. State forest lands should be at a higher level than the minimum requirements of the Forest Practices Act, and it is, and it will continue to do so. The 1.3 million trees that were planted last year in the Tillamook District is a classic example of good forest management. Those trees are 10 feet apart, and there wasn't even a quarter of that were harvested on the forest. They're planting more trees out there. They care about this forest for the long term. I encourage you to fix the slippage and to pass House Bill 2975. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Mark Rasmus, and I'm a principal and a forest economist at Mason, Bruce, and Girard, a natural resource consulting firm in Portland, Oregon. For the last 4 or 5 or 6 years, I've been serving as a consultant to the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties, and they've asked me today to briefly touch on three facts, three figures that should be important to you as you consider this bill. The first topic is the fact that the forest management plan reduces the value of the state forest lands by 60%, or nearly $1.4 billion. ODF's analysis using the H&H model shows that the present net value, or the current value of the 500,000 acres in the three northwest districts would be about $2.4 billion if it was managed under the Forest Practices Act. Under the Forest Management Plan, that drops to $0.97 billion because of lower harvest levels and more expensive logging practices. Now, ODF is currently working on calculating the net asset value of the forest, and I think it'll come out to at least $2.4 billion, maybe a little bit higher. If you use that as a divisor and look at the revenues expected under the Forest Management Plan, and compare that to the revenues expected under a plan that follows the Forest Practices Act, you'd see that under the Forest Management Plan, the return on that asset value would be about 1.6%. Managed under the Forest Practices Act, that would be about 5% return on asset value. Now, those figures will change as the department finalizes its calculation, but the relationship will stay the same. The second factor to consider is that the Forest Management Plan dedicates between 80 and 90% of the forest to developing complex forest structures. The objective of the Forest Management Plan is to create 50% complex structures in a mosaic that changes across landscape and time and space. But in order to create and maintain 50% of the forest, you have to dedicate 80 to 90% of the forest to meet that target. And as I said before, that's an expensive proposition. The third thing I can talk about today is how important the role that these forests play to the timber economy in Western Oregon. You'll see in my testimony a table that compares the acreage, the inventory, and the volume from different ownerships, timberland ownerships in Western Oregon. And if you look at all timberland, you'd see that the state lands comprise about 5.7% of Western Oregon's timberland and contribute about 7.9% of the state timber harvest. That comparison, I think, is a little bit misleading because nearly half of the state, the timberland in the state is on federal lands, and those acres contribute only about 5% of the harvest. So if you back the federal lands out of the equation, you'd see that the state forests account for about 10.6% of the state and private timberlands that are managed for harvest and contribute just 8.1% of the total harvest. You've heard some statistics about how many people are employed in the wood products industry. I looked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics for 2005 and found that there's about 64,500 workers in the wood products industry in the state. And the state at 8%, if the state is providing about 8% of the harvest, that means there's about a little over 5,000 workers whose jobs depend on timber from the state lands. When you consider that every job in that sector generates about 2.5 jobs in other sectors, that totals about 13,000 jobs across the state. And most of those, as Commissioner Josie said, are in the rural counties. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for this group? Yes, Representative McPherson.
This question, I think, actually for Commissioner Josie and the proposed language that he presented to us. How would the language that's on the second page of your materials depart from how the existing language of the statute has been interpreted and applied? That is, do you see this as being a significant departure from current practice?
From currently the way it's being interpreted and applied, you're talking about how would this change how it's currently being...
Yeah, I mean, we have a fairly clarify, Mr. Chair, we have a very broad statement of principle to secure the greatest permanent value, and the bill would replace that with some more specific language that sends it in one direction, and your suggested modification of the bill language would then add some other concepts into that, which I perceive as being sort of shifting it back to maybe the more the balance. And I'm just wondering, is it back with the language you're proposing, where it's more or less where we would be today under the way the existing language is being interpreted, or do you regard it as still shifting away from where the existing language is applied?
Well, I think it's hard for me to follow precisely what you're saying. I think that it does shift only. I mean, it doesn't really change the concept of the bill, the original bill. But what it does is it does say a couple of things in addition, couple of additional things to the bill. The first one, it says, it speaks to sustainability over the long term. And so that's the first component. And then the next thing that it says is, irrespective of what we do or what the Board of Forestry ultimately decides to do when they change the policy direction, if this bill is passed, with the primary purpose being timber production for the benefit of schools, trust counties, that sort of thing, can't exclude the other values. And we say that they are significant, but what we're saying, what the reason why we're here today, as you know, is because we think that the other values have gone too far, and $30 million a year is too much beyond what we had accepted at 279 million board feet per year, and you're going to hear other people say that these lands could be managed under the Forest Practices Act on a sustainable basis, under the Forest Practices Act, which I think is an environmentally very responsible piece of legislation. That's the last time I think it was amended was when I was here. It could produce 320 million board feet per year, these state forest lands. We accepted 279. Well, that's a difference of 40 million board feet per year that we were willing to give up to the greater good. That took a lot of time to get to compromise in 2001. But instead of 279, or 280 if you want to round it, we're at 180 if you want to round it. And so we feel that the primary purpose is no longer being met. This historical legal purpose of these lands is no longer being met, and what we're saying, if this passes, if this goes back to the Board of Forestry and says, Board of Forestry, you're off the mark, but ultimately, Board of Forestry, you're going to have to determine what that mark is, but you're off the mark today and you're going to have to fix it. But the deal has always been, through the last 70 years, the deal has always been that the Board of Forestry sets the final policy for how these lands are to be managed, and the department implements the policy. This would be statutory direction to the Board of Forestry that would resurrect what happened or correct the course that where everything got out of line in 2001, unbeknownst to us.
Can I rephrase your question a little bit? Because I think I see the amendments, let's say the current status of the way it's being interpreted, mm-hmm. as saying there are, each of these values have equal weight.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying here is that you're shifting that weight to one of those, though the others are important. Would that be fair? So if it was a third, a third, a third before.
The greatest permanent value says that all values are equal. We don't agree with that. In fact, and then statutorily, it doesn't say that.
Right.
And so we're saying that the greatest permanent value rule, it does need to be changed. There is a hierarchy in values that existed until 2001. And then Paul can talk about the statutory language. I mean, he will explain to you much better than I can that there is the language is in there today that really does imply that the primary purpose is for timber production for the benefit of the counties. When these lands were acquired, they were classified, and by law, there was a classification process put in there, and these lands were all in what? I'm going to turn it over to Paul. He can do a much better job of explaining this.
For purposes of the fire statute, back in the 1940s, again for the record, Paul Levesque, in the 1940s, there was this discussion about how the land should be used. There was an interest from the Cattlemen's Association that you could graze burned over timberland. And so to resolve that conflict, and the conflict came from the fact that in order to graze timberland, you have to use fire to control the brush and trees, because trees grow back. And so, to resolve that issue, they created a classification system where each county had to appoint a forest land classification committee and basically classify the lands. One of the classifications was primarily for timber production. And virtually all the lands in Northwest Oregon came into the system with that classification. That has been the view, as I said earlier, of the Department of Forestry and the Board of Forestry, as you can see in the record, in its policies and practices.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying my question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelder. And before she asks the question, I am going to tell people we have a number of people here who have to leave at 5. So we will be putting this over until Tuesday. We will continue the testimony. We're going to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak and gets their time in, because I do believe this, all of the issues and all of the people need to have a chance to speak. We do have one person who has indicated that they cannot come back, and we will try to get our county commissioners as well before we go, but I just want to let that be known. So, yes. So,
well, I will be quick because I want to make sure that the folks who came from far away have time to speak. But while we have Mr. Ladford here, I wanted to ask you, were you at the Department of Forestry when the Forest Management Plan was developed?
I was one of the ones that helped develop the Forest Management Plan.
So can you talk a little bit about the public input process that went into developing that plan? Because I was at some of those meetings. At the time, I was working as the watershed coordinator in the Tualatin watershed, which had a small portion of Tillamook forest land, so I did attend some of those. But I think it would be a value for the committee to hear, because there was, my understanding, I only attended a few, but a very extensive public hearing process, I mean, months and months and months, if not years, of public input in that. So I think it would be value to hear a little bit about how that forest management plan was developed.
Chair Roland, Representative Dingler, yes, I could just, you did a very good job. There was a significant public process of citizen involvement. There was also some work groups that were put together. There were some science groups that were put together. The plan was shopped throughout the Northwest Oregon area. Lots of public involvement that went into it. But I think what they were pushing toward was, this is what we think it'll do. And it's not doing that now. And so I think if you would ask the public involvement, did the plan do what it said it was going to do in terms of providing those values, there were some that are being provided, and there are some that say, as me, that says the plan has done some slippage, and there needs to be a correction done by the legislature to the Board of Forestry, to the Department of Forestry, on how those lands are managed. But in answer to your question, significant public involvement into that process.
Okay, just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if we're going to have anybody from the Board of Forestry testify, because I certainly would like to hear from them. I mean, and maybe I just need to call them directly and say, you know, has there been this testimony in front of the Board of Forestry? I guess what I'm struggling with is, maybe it's following on the question from Representative McPherson, is the Board of Forestry, I mean, we're not telling the Board of Forestry or the foresters saying this is exactly the amount we want you to harvest. It's still an interpretation by the Board of Forestry. So I guess I'm trying to figure out, you know, what discussions have gone on with the Board of Forestry about this issue, and, you know, would it be more appropriate to go back through that process and have another public input process to make those adjustments? Because there was extensive public input. I'm thinking about all the people who were involved in that initial process having similar type of public input if we're going to go back and change. You're talking about changes to the plan, making tweaks to the plan.
Correct.
Okay.
Tweaks to the plan. Do not throw the forest management plan out. Do not hear that in any of this conversation. You need to provide clear direction that allows for, the plan does right now allow for a movement one way or another based on new information. We have new information. We have an inventory system that was inaccurate that is now better. It's not the best in the world, but it's better. You have new information on the operability constraints that are out there. You have new information on insects and disease. The harvest levels that we're told, it was projected with this modeling that the harvest levels would be at a higher level. I apologize.
No, that's okay. And just one final, I guess, and we'll be here on Tuesday and hear some more testimony, but I guess what I'm struggling with, and I will, certainly be listening for the next, through the next hearing, is if we already have this ability and its adaptive management in place through the forest management plan, I guess that's where I'm struggling about why this language is needed if we have an adaptive management process through the forest management plan to take new information and the department can process that and make recommendations. So I guess maybe, I just need to hear more from on all sides of this, but having been there at some of those initial hearings, that's what I'm trying to figure out is the adaptive management process not working? In your professional opinion, you've been working with the Department of Forestry for a long time.
Chair Roblin, Representing Feather, the current Board of Forestry, I think there's one member that's on the Board of Forestry now that was there when the Forest Management Plan was developed. So you have a whole new Board of Forestry that has very little experience on how that plan was developed. Adaptive management is a key part of the Forest Management Plan, and that's why you can do this tweaking. In my opinion, what needs to happen is the Department of Forestry has made a significant, or made a departure as a result of this chart right here that shows in the last few years, they're making a significant departure downwards in the terms of millions, $30 million in terms of revenue to the state of Oregon and to the counties. And that departure is a result, I believe, of the way that the plan is being interpreted. The legislature needs, in my opinion, to give clear legislative direction about the purpose of the lands, the primary purpose of the lands, that clarifies it to the Board of Forestry and says, legislature, we hear you. You are the managers of the state, and we hear you, and we will implement your legislative direction, and then the Department of Forestry implements the harvest levels.
Yeah. I'll try to be very brief. I was the vice chair of the Trust Counties, of course, before I was the chair, and so I was involved. I went to every Board of Forestry meeting during the adoption of the plan, and then a couple, 3 years prior to that, and extensively involved and been involved since. I remember listening to the Board of Forestry that ultimately adopted the Forest Management Plan, and as Sam Johnson used to be on the Board of Forestry, he talked about the adoption of the Greatest Permanent Value Rule, and he says, I remember him specifically saying this. He said, I remember how difficult that was in terms of trying to figure out what the primary purpose of these lands were. And if you look at the different functions that these, if you look at the Greatest Permanent Value Rule, timber production is at the top, but it doesn't specifically say that. And he says, but we all recognize now that timber production is the primary purpose of these lands. And so they adopted the plan. And then the entire Board of Forestry was replaced. There was one board member. His name is Chris Heffernan. He had just come on board just in time to vote in favor of that. Now we've got a brand new Board of Forestry. We find out that the numbers were bogus to start with, and now this current Board of Forestry is struggling terribly. And I have testified before them many, many times about you've got to meet your legal obligation to the counties. And they keep talking about the primary purpose of the land. What does that mean? And they have spent months and months and months talking about how do you balance this thing, and then amongst themselves they continue to argue. So I think to myself, what they need? They need some legislative direction that says the primary purpose is timber production. Get it back on base. That's the purpose of this bill. The Board of Forestry is struggling, and they need direction.
Let's hold off.
To see if Mark was going to be here next week.
Well, we're going to check. We're going to check that right now. How many of the people who are here cannot possibly be back next week? And there's a lot of them are county. Oh, there's a lot of people. A bunch of them are county commissioners, and some of them are more than 150 miles away.
You need a quorum. That's all you need.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't need a quorum.
Means
yeah. So those people who cannot be back.
Oh, for tonight.
We will hear you.
Yeah.
Tonight. And so. Start coming up from that grave. If some other people can come back, first with our county commissioners that we have from different places, if you'll come up in the front few seats, we will make sure that we get all your testimony if you cannot come back. And then we'll get the next group. If people have to leave, they'll have to leave. And I will stay here. And we'll keep recording. So the other people, Tuesday we will have a full hearing and time again, so we'll keep going with this. And try to keep it as brief as you can.
I will.
Thank you.
Chair Rowland and Board, my name is Patricia Roberts, and I am the Vice Chair at the Clatsop County Board of Commissioners. I sit on the, I always get this wrong, Council of Forest Trust Land as a representative for the county. I'm new to that position, but I want to tell you that I remember the Tillamook burn. I remember going down that road and seeing those burnt trees. And I got to tell you, it looks a whole lot better now. I've been out in the forest with our Astoria area forester probably a dozen times since I've joined the board less than 3 years ago. I'm impressed with what I see. And I want you to know that there's a lot that's working and that they are thinning the trees. There's been a good harvest level. They can continue from everything that I am hearing from them at a higher level than they're doing now. Everything is by directive from the Board of Forestry, and then they implement where the cuts are made. To further complement or to complicate the county's dilemma, you realize that when contracts are let, that it can be up to 2 years before they're actually cut and the timber revenues come in. So the county, even though they know so many sales have been let, we don't know really what our prospective dollars are. And I'm talking to you, the Clatsop County Commissioners are volunteers. We are not paid. This is not a paid job. So we're here out of service to our community. And on that basis, I want to tell you that in addition to the county, there are over 24 districts directly receiving funds from the Forest Trust lands. Those include our schools, our community college, our rural law enforcement, our 4-H Extension Service, the Port of Astoria, the Clatsop County Fairgrounds, not to mention the Sunset Park and Recreation and the Sunset Transportation. By a vast majority of the money that goes to the is
in schools. A little bit back from the mic, because that's what
Sorry.
Just
sorry.
Sit back a little
okay.
bit. Push it forward.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Oh, there. That is a lot better. Ours, we have to be right at
yeah, next.
That these dollars make the difference in our community. And in they permeate to every level of our social and societal being. In addition to that, it's all the jobs that are there that actually execute the cuts. And those are very vastly superior wage jobs to the service industries that are usually available in our resort communities. And so these are very, very important jobs to us besides being the tradition. And I just want to say that in no way are we saying to abandon the forest management plan. We support it. We understand there's a difference, but we feel that things are severely out of whack when our revenues drop so distinctly. And so I would urge you to support this bill, to put it forward, and to help correct what we see as deficiency.
Thank you very much.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, I am Clatsop County Commissioner Ann Samuelson, District 5, and I live in the forest. As a resident of rural Oregon forest land, wife of a logger, small forest landowner, and a Clatsop County Commissioner, I respectfully ask that for the economic and cultural stability, which I want you to just for a second think about that. This is our life. This is many people's lives. This is multi-generational. That you help us sustain that stability in our community so that you adopt House Bill 2975, which facilitates
and gives you the opportunity for Oregon to keep its promise to Oregon counties. In my community, there are a number of multi-generational timber families, as I mentioned. Few appreciate the forest as much as those who have worked in them for generations. This has happened because, as we know, trees are a renewable resource. Do not ask me to grow a houseplant, but I could grow 2,000 trees a year. So defining the greatest permanent value is critical to the current and future economic engine that timber production represents in my county, in Clatsop County. The balance of habitat, environmental, and concerns, recreation, are all understood, and they're valued by timber families and timber communities. But there needs to be a balance in terms of production. And I feel like we've really, the word slippage has stuck with me since I've been living. We've slipped. We have really slipped. And I look to you as our legislators to pull us back up, because somebody needs to say, wait a minute. So I just ask that you look at this. I won't take more of your time, but it's critical to the economy of ours. It pays my light bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Chair Roblin and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Raffenberg. I am the chair of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners. I'm on the board of directors of the OEC counties. And I'm a member of NACO's Public Land Steering Committee. I'm here today to ask you to support HB 2975 because the timber counties, as you well know, are in crisis. I was before this committee a few weeks ago testifying about what's going to happen in our county as a result of the loss of the federal money from the public law 106393. Earlier this afternoon, Commissioner Josie used the analogy of a 1-2 punch to what the loss of that federal money would mean. Timber counties, as you well know, have lost first the economic benefit of the jobs that the timber industry produced, mm-hmm. and the compensation that we receive from the federal government replaces only government's needs. It doesn't replace all those lost jobs. As we've heard, 60,000 jobs since 1993 are gone. The amount of money that Josephine County receives from the Council on Forest Trust Lands is minimal, but that's because we receive primarily O&C funds. It's just the reverse the farther north you go. This would be more along the lines of if these trust lands do not receive the revenue that they are capable of receiving to a sustained yield basis, it's going to be more like a three strikes and you're out situation. These revenues are critical to northern counties, and the contrary to some testimony I heard from one of our honorable representatives earlier, this is not an end run by this committee or by the request for this bill to be passed. Staff sometimes goes astray, and they need to be put back on course. That happens all the time in county government. As a commissioner, we have legislative, executive, and quasi-judicial responsibilities. And quite often, even though we will pass an ordinance, we constantly have to redirect staff through the executive authority that we have. In this case, the only authority that you have is through legislation. And so this is definitely a case of where the legislature needs to make sure and to clarify that it has given clear direction to the state workers that are going to apply the legislation and the laws that you've given it. So in closing, it's very important that we recognize this is a trust issue. Our trust in the federal government is currently being shaken to its core. We can't afford to have our trust in state government shaken to its core. The counties are on the verge more than a lot of people think of insolvency. And this, if Southern counties go insolvent, you don't need the Northern counties going insolvent too. It's just going to add to the burden of the state to have to overcome this tragedy all the way around. So I urge you to support HB 2975. It's vital.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for waiting. And it's just important to get a lot of that base information for us. So the next group, come on up.
Chairman Roblin.
Nice to see you.
Thanks. Members of the committee, I'm John Griffith, Chairman of the Board of Coosa County Commissioners. I'm also, for the whole time I've been a commissioner, I've been on the board of the Council of Forest Trust Land Counties, and I'm on the Elliott State Forest Steering Committee. The Elliott is common school fund. It's managed by the state land board, but it, too, manages that forest at only half of its sustainability level. Coos County has its own little forest. It's 15,000 acres managed per the Forest Practices Act. We put out 9 million board feet a year, $3.5 million a year to our general fund. It used to be a quarter of our general fund, but now that the federal government's reneged on us, it's half. We use that to employ sheriff's deputies, health department nurses. You use the same numbers, or rule of thumb, it'd be 600 board feet per acre per year on the 630-acre Board of Forestry lands up north. They should be getting, if we're getting 9 million feet, they should be getting 378 million feet. As Commissioner Josie said, it's 180, so it's, I mean, it's just nowhere close to what it should be at a sustainable level. Our little forest, it's very important to recreationists. We have trails for horses, motorbikes, hikers, dirt bikes. Very good deer habitat. ODFW uses it as one of its base monitoring sites. We have good coho habitat. ODFW has monitored it for that, too. Because you might hear more about salmon. I don't know what you're going to hear after I have to leave. But there's something called the Oregon Coast Naturals, which go from sort of like Monterey area up through Oregon, or OCNs. The South Coast has typically, almost always, had higher numbers of OCNs than the North Coast. It has to do with upwelling, I think. I don't know. I'm not a biologist. But Coos and Coquille rivers and the lakes component have been heavily logged and still are by Weyerhaeuser, GP, and International Paper. And still, somehow or another, we always get higher OCNs than they do on the North Coast. There's another thing that I think people who live by the coast usually understand it, but some forget, is that the ocean, some years it heaves up abundance and some years it's terribly stingy. I was on the Salmon Anchor Habitat Committee when that debate was going on. I recall then that the numbers were, in 1997 there was only 22,000 OCNs. In 2002 it was 210,000. So in other words, a factor of 10 in just 5 years. That's the ocean. I mean, that's what stirs stuff up. I kind of keep an eye on it. I like to splash around in it. I can tell you when it's having a good year or not. So I urge you to please move this House Bill 2975 out forward to the floor. Thank you.
My name's Sam Patrick. I'm commissioner with Clatsop County. And I hope you'll forgive my sunglasses because I just got out and my synapses didn't connect or something. I needed to read a couple of things. right off the get from the get-go, would urge you to support this piece of legislation. I think it's needed. I've been on the Forest Trust Land Council and CFTLC for about 5 years, and I've personally seen a change in state forestry and their attitudes towards harvest. I believe that there is room to increase the harvest in the forest. Clatsop County has about 139,000 acres of state forest land in the county. Currently, we can harvest off of about 79,000 acres. The rest of it is riparian or steep or for some other reason can't be harvested. This timber revenue is extremely important to the county. Without this, the county would have gone bankrupt some time ago. Around 2000, 2001, we first got the information that there was a PERS actuarial liability that the county had. And the first we heard of that, it was about $2 million. By the time we got around to collecting the money to pay that $2 million, it had gone up to $3 million. So we used timber revenue in 2003 to pay that PERS actuarial liability. Well, in 2004, we found out that we hadn't actually paid off all of our liability, that there was another $9 million that we needed to pay off.
we used bonds to pay the $9 million off, or we're paying it off with bonds, or we paid it off and we're repaying the bonds. And if it weren't for the Forest Trust land monies, we wouldn't be able to do that. We wouldn't have the money. We'd still be growing the actuarial liability and have that $12 million out there. With the Forest Trust land money, with that trust revenue, we've managed in the past 5 years to pay off $3 million of it, and we're in the process of paying off the liability, actuarial liability for the $9,000. We've purchased a building for the county offices, so we don't have to pay rent to to someone outside the county, and we actually rent a few offices in that space. We've purchased a building that houses our Health and Human Services Department. We've remodeled the court building, improved security access, and added a third courtroom. Without this money, we could not have done that. We have another judge, and we're still trying to figure out how we're going to pay for the increase in the DA's staff and to increase the size of the jail to keep all the people that are going to come from that third courtroom. But without these monies, we would not be able to even think about doing that. We've also used the money to bring county buildings up to earthquake standards. We have $471,000 a year that goes into juvenile detention. We've leased part of the juvenile correction facility on the North Coast, and we use that. We staff it it's a contract with some other folks, but that comes from this money. We also have $15,000, which isn't a whole lot, that goes to some of the nonprofits in the county, like CASA and North Coast Women's Resource and Pioneer House. And we wouldn't have the money to do that if we didn't have this revenue coming in. We purchase equipment for law enforcement. We purchase equipment, computers, Xerox machines, one-time items that we wouldn't be able to purchase without this revenue. And if it goes away, we won't be able to do it. And currently, the money or the timber revenue coming to the county is diminishing. I look, and it's been mentioned several times here today, I thought I was going to be the only one to mention it, that we're going to, Tillamook County and Clatsop County are going to wind up like the other, the ONC counties, and we're not going to have the revenue from a resource that's in our counties to help us pay for the use by people from somewhere else. We welcome those people. We can't live with, or we can't make it economically without those folks. Tourism is the largest builder of money for us. The forest plays a part of that. We understand that we need to keep the forest there. We believe in sustainability. And we would encourage you to pass this legislation and sustain the income to the counties also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
And I think we only have a couple people, too.
I can come back on Tuesday, so if you get people from further away.
Yeah, the people who still can't come back. I think there's a couple others. Yes, come on both. Come on up. I appreciate that. And I appreciate all of your attentions and being here. And we will keep the lists. So if you're already signed up, that's the list we'll start off on next time. If we have other people come, they'll get a new list. So we will keep that.
Thank you very much. My name is Doug Olson. I live at 35225 4th Street in Pacific City in Tillamook County. My remarks today will be quite brief because you've heard the facts and figures and the dollars and all that from others, and there's no need to repeat that. I do serve on as a past president and on the board of the Pacific City Neseca Valley Chamber of Commerce, also on the board of the Tillamook County Economic Development Council, and also the current chair of the Tillamook County Budget Committee. So I do have some familiarity familiarity with the numbers side of all this. But really, I'm here today as a native Oregonian, a business owner, and just a private citizen. You've heard about Oregon as a natural resource state again and again, and you'll hear it more, I'm sure, and that is certainly true. You've heard about the history of the Forest Practices Act, which became a model for America, and then the Forest Management Plan. These things, I guess, at this point are given. What I've learned about the Forest Management Plan over the years is that is a living document, which is what it was intended to be. And I think that's what people are asking you to consider, is to take in new data and ask for some changes. And I'm simply here today to take the macro approach, not the micro approach, and ask you to do what you were elected to do, which is to represent everyone, not just those in your district, not just those from a partisan standpoint, but all Oregonians, and to find a balance between those who might wish to roll back the clock and clear-cut like was done 30, 40 years ago, and those who might wish to drastically reduce the harvests in our state forests. The history, you heard from Mr. Levesque and others, it's quite detailed and quite fascinating. It's generated two lawsuits, which found in favor of what you're being asked to do today. But I guess the last thing, a couple of things I would point out is we're talking today about real people. This is not an academic exercise. We're talking about people, about jobs, about taxes, about our criminal justice system, our health systems, and things that are funded by what, in my judgment, is the ultimate natural resource. Renewable resource. Timber can be harvested, replanted, and done it again indefinitely if it's properly managed. And I really believe that, and having grown up in Oregon in a small town where there were three mills, I believe there's now one, things change. So I'm asking you finally to consider doing what is moral, what is ethically correct, and what your predecessors in this building many years ago did. And carry that forward and do what's right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, good evening, and members of the committee. I am Bill Goodman, president of the Pacific City and the Stuckey Valley Chamber of Commerce, and I support HB 2975. I have lived and worked in South Tillamook County area for 29 years, and in addition to my current position, I have served my area as a school board member for 12 years and a director on the Tillamook People's Utility District for 8 years. Members of the committee, South Tillamook County is an area of unincorporated towns with two major industries, dairy farming and timber production and harvest. There's a third industry, tourism, particularly in Pacific City, and it is very seasonal. About one-third of the people I have met and I have worked with over my 29 years in my community work in one capacity or another in the forest or forest products industry. I have five close neighbors who own and operate their own log trucks. Three other neighbors are logging contractors, and many of our young people begin their working careers in the woods or seek employment in one of several mills. These are all family wage jobs which provide families with their homes and lifestyles where they can participate as productive citizens in our community. The current interpretation of the greatest permanent value rule and misrepresentations given when the Forest Management Plan was adopted in 2001 have resulted in the reduction of timber harvest to sink to about 65% of what was expected. Tillamook County is a timber and dairy area. These two industries provide the majority of our local jobs. We need to return to our promised level of harvest. We need to return to our greater employment level in our timber industry, and we need the passage of HB 2975 to accomplish that. Healthy forest ecosystems depend on more active management than is currently allowed. Healthy forests attract thousands of people a year to our area for hiking, birding, camping, and fishing, and this will not change with the passage of HB 2975. Committee members, I urge you to join with me and my neighbors, the loggers and the contractors, the truck drivers in Tillamook County, to support the passage of this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for accommodating those of us who can't come back again on Tuesday. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. I'm Dave Ivanoff, Vice President of Resources for Hampton Lumber. And if I could ask that the members of the committee be given a copy of my testimony, please, I'd appreciate it. There are some photographs in there that might be useful as I'm talking. I will go through my testimony fairly quickly. There's more detailed information provided. I've been involved in the development of the forest management plan and implementation by attending numerous meetings since 1994. I'm very well familiar with the history of the plan and how we are where we are today. Our company is a family-owned company. We own sawmills in Willamina and Tillamook. We have 542 employees with an annual payroll of $25 million. Following the shutdown of our federal forests in the early 1990s, John Hampton, who passed away a year ago today, continued to invest in these sawmills to make them world-class mills that can compete in the global economy. And John and his family have continued to invest in those facilities. What happened when the federal timber sale program shut down forced our company and many other family-owned companies in western Oregon and across eastern Oregon as well to import volume from the state of Washington and British Columbia to replace this lost federal supply. This amounts to about 400 to 500 million board feet per year, enough volume to supply the needs of four or five large sawmills in the state of Oregon. This has been going on since about 1994, and there's some new changes that are happening that are putting at risk Oregon's forest products infrastructure. New capacity that has been added in the state of Washington and is going to be added in the state of Washington has begun to intercept this flow of much-needed volume that has kept our infrastructure intact. Unless there's something done with public timber supply in this state, the inevitable downsizing, further downsizing of Oregon's forest product sector is going to transpire, and this is going to bring about more social and economic stress in our rural timber-dependent communities. It's clear that healthy forest ecosystems, as a gentleman testified ahead of me, depends on active forest management. And active management involves the need for world-class sawmills and other conversion facilities and a skilled workforce. If we lose infrastructure in this state because of inadequate raw material supply, it's going to bring about the social and economic stress I mentioned earlier, but it's also going to exacerbate the conversion of forest land to non-forest uses as private forest landowners and public landowners, for that matter, lose markets with which to sell their logs and timber. If they can't make an acceptable return on their asset value, those forest lands will no longer be managed as forest lands. There's no question that forest health issues will be compromised with loss of additional infrastructure in this state. All we have to do is look at what's transpired on the Biscuit Fire in southern Oregon and the conversion of forest land to non-forest uses going on in eastern Oregon. This is essentially a roadmap for the same thing transpiring on the west side of the state if we lose additional infrastructure. I can't overstate the need for higher public timber outputs, both for the health of our forest products industry, the communities in which we operate, and for the forest ecosystems that we all cherish. As it relates to the forest management plan, structure-based management is the silvicultural strategy that is being utilized in this plan. And I've been a practicing forester for over 35 years in the state of Oregon. I practice forestry on both sides of the Cascades. And well-intentioned ODF staff assured me and the Board of Forestry on numerous occasions that structure-based management would replicate the timber outputs and revenue flow that our more traditional approaches to forest management would generate. I was skeptical in that period of time, but basically got behind the approval of the forest management plan based on the promised outputs of 279 million feet a year. After 6 years of plan implementation and new ODF modeling efforts, those assumptions have proven themselves to be false. The long-term productivity of our state lands under this structure-based management approach, in my view, are compromising the site productivity of these lands. The heavy thinnings designed to create large diameter trees over extended rotations, those two things coupled together are compromising the productivity of the forest. Last spring, prior to the devastating wind throw events that we experienced in November and December of this year, I testified in front of the Board of Forestry about an ongoing concern that I had that the rigid application of structure-based management or thinning rotation age hemlock on the coastal strip was resulting in unacceptable resource waste. Basically, paraphrasing what the department responded to the board was that it was a non-issue and that what I was saying was really not relevant. I've included some photographs that in my testimony that showcase what I'm talking about. In my view, the blowdown that's occurring on these forests under this system is resulting in piecemeal resource waste to the extent that there's not enough volume in any one given area to justify going after, but also to the extent we do go in and salvage that timber after it's blown down, it results in reduced stumpage rates because of the higher logging costs associated with two limited volume entries. In addition, the forest health is going to be compromised by these pockets of unnatural accumulations of slash and woody debris that result from this blowdown in the form of a potential catastrophic wildfire outbreak or an insect outbreak. The concern I had last spring about this wind throw issue has just been magnified, you know, 100 times over by the events of the storms that we experienced this winter. The current management strategies embodied within this forest management plan, in my view, impose impediments that are self-imposed that unnecessarily restrict timber outputs and revenue flow. There's no good reason, in my view, why these state lands shouldn't be managed to the standards of the Forest Practices Act. The Oregon Forest Practices Act has been a model for the nation in terms of how forest operations are regulated, but at the same time providing for the other environmental amenities that we know are so important. Look at the wonderful work that's being done by the forest landowning community in this state in terms of habitat restoration for salmonids when we're actively operating harvest operations and doing stream enhancement work under the salmon plan simultaneously with that. The Oregon forest product sector and the forest landowners' efforts to grow and harvest wood fiber is an outstanding example of a green and sustainable enterprise, and we ought to be looking to do more of that. In this time of bioenergy and all these sorts of things, we can have it all in terms of active management and environmental enhancement. Reestablishing timber production as the leading use of state lands will improve the prospects for our healthy forests and communities within the state of Oregon, and we wholeheartedly support the county's efforts in this regard. To the extent that there was not a revenue impact statement prepared, I took the liberty of preparing a spreadsheet, which hopefully can outline what I'm talking about. And I'll just draw your attention to the very bottom line and what the revenue impact is under the current forest management strategy and what would be capable under more traditional approaches on a sustainable manner is about $102 million every biennium. And I would respectfully submit to the committee that Oregon's needs for higher education and so forth and all the other aspects that we cherish in terms of our social fabric, if we could more actively manage our forest lands, we would improve the overall social and economic well-being of this state. And with that, I very much appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Any questions? I appreciate your testimony. And all of the pictures are of different blowdown events.
Yes, right? Yes, sir. And they're all on the Astoria District. Those photographs were taken recently by our area forester out of our Napa office up there. Thank you.
I think that concludes all the people who said they couldn't come back. I appreciate all of the testimony. I look forward to next Tuesday and setting aside. We have the list of people who have already signed up. They will remain on the list and be the first people we call when we get back, and we will have others if they come up to testify. We also may be opening a hearing on another state lands issue at that time, and that's the Elliott Forest. But we'll see how many it takes to do this before we take on that next issue. So, again, I want to thank everyone for being here. And any questions at all from a couple of us that are left?
No questions.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Burley, thank you for joining us.
Well,
today.
Thank you.
And we will close our hearing on House Bill 2975. And with no further business, we will close our committee.